Welcome to Strengthen, a podcast dedicated to inspiring you to become your strongest self. I am your host, Gabby Barreto, a registered dietitian and personal trainer with the mission of empowering you to become the best version of yourself yet. So let's get stronger together. And today we're going to be talking about wellness culture. So the title of this is Wellness Culture and Disordered Eating, a Recipe for Orthorexia. So I'm going to start this episode by defining what wellness culture even is, take our way into defining wellness culture, give us some examples of, you know, wellness culture versus diet culture, and then talk a lot about these fad diet trends within wellness culture slash diet culture, because I'm really going to kind of highlight to you guys that these are two very similar cultures in a way, and you know, how that ties to a type of eating disorder, which is known as orthorexia. Why I'm so passionate about this is that probably around like in the early 2010s, I was so invested in wellness culture, in diet culture, in disordered eating, and like this obsession with like being healthy and healthism, which is part of the eating disorder orthorexia, which is, you know, I'm going to define more clearly later in the episode, but it's the unhealthy obsession with healthy eating and ingredients and like the purity and the cleanness of your food, which is very deeply rooted in like this wellness culture, diet culture world that I lived in and kind of took over my life for so many years. So I talk so much about these topics because not only did I, you know, live and experience it, I now have the knowledge and skills to really read the science to you guys. And a lot in this episode, I am going to be talking about, you know, kind of the quasi-science that's based in wellness culture, but at the same time, some of the recommendations that are made are like not completely false, but it's almost like this over-exaggeration of what some specific quote-unquote remedies can do. My just a quick kind of few minutes of my trip into wellness culture was kind of bred out of like my disordered eating drive to like thinness and like my early 20s that kind of developed there, and I kind of took like a road into like even like my first kind of like health coaching business was called Gabby for Health, but I would call it like Gabby for Orthorexia. I joke about a lot of this stuff, but in serious, it really did kind of really take over a large part of my life. And, you know, I kind of lost some years of like enjoyment of life to this stuff. And so what happened was I kind of took this like turn from like, not only let's restrict what we're eating, but like now all the food that we're eating needs to actually be like super clean and like pure, and it can't have anything in it that you can't pronounce. It was so disordered to the point where like I couldn't eat out. I couldn't like eat out. I couldn't participate in like social events. And as I define orthorexia later, like you'll start to hear a lot of these like symptoms in what I'm talking about now. What happened was in about, I don't remember what year it was. Let's just call it 2013. Or 2012, I enrolled in a course called the IIN, which is the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, which is like a giant wellness culture trap. It has some great parts to it. Like it has some good education pieces, but the way that it's, and this is the thing about wellness culture as I defined it, is the way that things are delivered to you as if this is the absolute only viewpoint that you should have on food and nutrition and wellness practices. And like anything else is absolutely wrong and toxic and diabolical. I not only took it from like my food having to be pure, it like even like went to like, I will only clean with like this weird non-toxic spray that doesn't really clean anything. Like, girl, pass me the Windex. Like, give me some Windex. But enrolling in this course, Institute of Integrative Nutrition, I was scared about everything. I was scared of dairy. I was scared of eating any sugar. I was scared of like eating meat for a while. I was scared of food to the 10th degree. Like the way that things and topics were presented were very, very strongly opinionated, to the point where like if you were vulnerable like me in my early 20s, just like in my own mental health space, I was so vulnerable and gullible to this stuff, like you were going to eat it all up. So I took this course, Institute for Integrative Nutrition. It's the IIN. I call it a scam. I know many people who have taken it. It's like, if I were to take the course now, I'd probably like find some things useful and like kind of like throw out the rest. But just that time in my life, it was just, I really should have gone back to school, which I eventually did go back to school and become a dietitian and really learn a lot more and really learn about like the real science and not just like these very emotional diatribes about certain dietary patterns. I remember there was this guy, his name was like David Wolf. You can Google David Wolf and you can be like, girl, you paid attention to this guy? And like he would be like coaching you through making like one of these smoothies that had all these crazy ingredients. It was like marshmallow root and like maca powder and like goji berries and these smoothies that I would make, and aloe vera. Oh my gosh, I wondered why. I thought I had IBS. I was like, oh my gosh, I have IBS. And it was really because I was putting aloe vera gel in my smoothies and dying on the toilet. TMI, but not TMI. But I prescribed to this like intense cult-like culture, which convinced me that like if it wasn't pure and clean and like from a health food store and costs like five times the amount of what it actually should cost me if I just went to like Stop and Shop or like Trader Joe's, that like it wasn't good enough for me. And so I went through this program and I was indoctrinated by this for a while. I even followed all these people, like the Food Babe, and there was this like blonde girl that I followed, and this was like super early 2010s. And so like the pretty like smoothie bowls were like the thing. Like, let's take it back to 2013 when everybody was making a smoothie bowl and like putting the berries so perfect. And like, I thought that my food always had to look like so perfect and so pretty and like so vegan and like no protein, like muscle. Where was my muscle mass then? And so like, it was just such a toxic time in terms of my relationship with food, where I went from like one extreme of like restriction to like this other extreme of restriction, where like maybe I was like calorically eating more, but like what I was able to eat and like my lifestyle was completely unlivable on many levels. And I'll talk more about that when we get into orthorexia. But let's start to talk about and define what wellness culture is. So I talk a lot about diet culture, right? And diet culture is marked by thinness, body shape, a certain size, a certain like, and now really going into like the muscularity part. And I say this as somebody who does have a very muscular physique. But like diet culture is really marking your value and your worth in society by the way that you look. And the way that your body is presented and the way your body shows up. If you go back to earlier episodes, I have spoken a lot about this in terms of the objectification theory of women's bodies. And I do recommend that you go back and you listen to that episode. I'm looking up what episode it is. It is my episode on objectification theory and toxic fitness/diet culture, the effect on women's body image, where I really talk a lot about this objectification theory and diet culture and how it impacts women's bodies, not just physically, mentally, emotionally, and our body image. But Rudaya culture really has really done a number on us as women. In it really equating thinness with moral success and fatness with like this society, like you being a failure and how fatter bodies are treated in society in general, you know, access to healthcare, treatment at the doctor's office, jobs in public, the kind of services people get. And so diet culture really drives people to disordered eating, dieting, which is probably the biggest risk factor for developing disordered eating, unhealthy relationships with food, unhealthy relationships with exercise and your body, etc. So when we talk about wellness culture, like there's a lot of similarities there. But in wellness culture, we're kind of prescribing the moral or like societal hierarchy or like value around certain behaviors around food, food choices, routines. That's like a big thing now trending. It's like my morning routine, my healing routine, certain healing treatments, how people participate in healthcare versus like West, you know, prescribing to Western medicine versus prescribing to like a more alternative approach. And it's just this like silent, I'm better than you because I don't take Tylenol. I'm better than you because when I'm sick, I don't take acetaminophen. I don't take a decongestant or a cough suppressant. Like I take these herbs and tinctures, which is something I did once. Quick story. I was so sick once when I was like wrapped up in like wellness culture that I was so sick and I like refused to take anything. I definitely had a horrible fever. I went to a health food store and I went to the guy behind the counter and I was like, these are my symptoms. And he handed me like $70, $75. And I did not have money at the time worth of like different like little vials of like what I should be taking. I to this day do not remember what they were. And I was like putting them in my tea and still feeling so sick. I think I ended up at the doctor anyway because I probably had the flu. But like that's kind of like where I was. And that's kind of like a little example of wellness culture and how it can like influence our health. And while we're trying to participate in all these like healthier things, how it can kind of like backfire on us. But wellness culture, very similarly to diet culture, just prescribes this like moral or like societal hierarchy to those who like prescribe to a lot of their recommendations or a lot of their BS. It kind of has this like air of privilege to it, being that a lot of these products or these, even the food itself, are a lot more expensive or really just like overpriced. And I'm going to talk about a lot of them in a bit. And I tell people all the time, like whether you have money or not, like you don't need to waste your time, your health, or your money on a lot of these things. Like it really prescribes a lot of like moral superiority to like a full organic pantry when like we know that some things, like maybe some things should be organic. I'm very big on organic berries, but there are a lot of things that are don't necessarily need to be organic and are just a lot more expensive. And kind of like wellness culture kind of makes health seem much more inaccessible than it actually is. And when we're looking at some of these wellness culture recommendations that I'm going to talk about in a bit, a lot of these recommendations are rooted in either no science, right? So we have this example of this carrot salad. Oh my gosh, there was this carrot salad that came out that it was like a raw carrot salad is going to help detox estrogen from women's bodies. And there's literally, you can go into PubMed and find zero studies about it. But some like wellness culture-y doctor, diet culture-y doctor, like came up with this raw carrot salad, like with no scientific evidence behind it. So it's either rooted in no science or very weak evidence and research. A lot of it is because of marketing and money, right? So we know that we can market to a specific group of people who are going to spend their money on our very expensive products and our very expensive lifestyle, being pushed by influencers, being pushed by podcasters, who generally either have a huge investment, or are being paid to sell. One of the big things, there is a very big supplement brand out there that has paid and actually does get a lot of their money from podcast marketing. And this product is like this multivitamin, multi-mineral, has adaptogens, has probiotics. And in my mind, as a nutritionist and who studies a lot of supplements, can't wrap their head around how one product with all of these things in it being taken at one time can have all of the benefits that they're claiming. And the website is very wellness culture-y. It is like the right colors and the right color scheme. And like, you know, a little, you know what I mean by the color scheme? It's like a little muted. It's like a muted color scheme. It's very beige with a little bit of color. Y'all know what I'm talking about? I might mention the brand. I might not. I think I've decided that I'm not going to mention the brand. But they're selling this product that has no scientific evidence behind the product itself. Now, some of the ingredients in the product, yes, they have scientific evidence. But the product itself, there's no research on the actual usage of the product and the claims that they are making. And I know this for a fact because one, there doesn't exist. It would be on their website. Two, I interviewed with them and was asking a lot of questions about this, you know, and their claims. Because if I'm going to work for somebody, I got to know that things are like real. I've had a job before where like there were a lot of claims made, and me and the, you know, science staff, which were nutritionists, really worked hard to like kind of work on the claims that we're making and how we're able to make them and actually be based in science, which when you're working with ingredients, I will tell you from my experience and working with supplements, it's very hard to make the claims based on science if you're not using the dosages being studied. And a lot of these products are not necessarily using the dosages being studied to make those claims. So anyway, going back to this supplement that doesn't have any science, they actually put out a paper. And I was like, oh, wow, they put out research. They didn't put out a paper on their product. They put out a paper on like the power of like whole foods and supplements on health, but it wasn't a clinical trial on their supplement. I digressed for about 5 minutes there, but it's totally fine. My point is that a lot of claims being made, I say this a lot on this podcast, are rooted in weak evidence and research. It's not to say that all of them are wrong or bad or harmful, but they're trying to prove a point to sell their wellness culture product. And just to clarify what I mean by like weak evidence or not very strong studies or strong research is that the research may not be done on a large group of people. The might be a small group of people. That's what we call like the sample size. There may be like no control group. There have been studies that, you know, when we do an intervention, right, or a clinical trial where it is like the best is a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial, right, where you have two groups of people. Neither of them know if they're getting the intervention or not, nor do the researchers. And they then do the analysis and see what the outcomes are of the trial. So like, let's say you give somebody, you give one group colostrum, you give one group a placebo. They think it's colostrum. They're not sure if it's colostrum. Both groups aren't sure if they're getting the intervention. And the people who are researching don't know who has the colostrum and who doesn't. I'm going to talk about colostrum. And so they may look to see, oh, who has, you know, which individuals had a benefit or which ones didn't. So they're doing a certain measurement. And then after they do their analysis, they'll see who had the colostrum and who didn't and see if there was an actual effect of it. And so that's what we mean. That's like the gold standard for, you know, studying supplements, studying certain things, is that there's a control group. So some studies might not have that. They might just be looking at people who take XYZ supplement and seeing what their outcomes are. There might be other factors. When I'm looking at research, I might be looking at what are some other factors that could have influenced the results. Could it be their overall diet? Could it be that these people, you know, that they looked at the sample, were they, you know, a little biased in the sample? Could their diet have had an impact? Could their exercise have had an impact? We don't know. Sometimes a lot of studies, diet is not being controlled. So unless diet is controlled, that can always influence things. the study can be not great. And then the last thing is no replication of the study, meaning if I have one study that says colostrum supplementation is beneficial for skin health, and I only have one study that's looking at, you know, women's wrinkles or whatever, and I don't have another group of scientists or researchers that have also done that study and then have also looked at, you know, looked at that and replicated it, I can't really say that this is like a cold hard thing, but companies are going to use that one study and run with it, because it's a study and it's published, but it doesn't mean that it's great science. So I hope that you now understand what I mean by like crappy science or like not great science, and understand that sometimes when we're looking at these like wellness diet culture products, that they're not necessarily like really rooted in great science. So coming back to like finishing up our kind of like our definition of wellness culture, when it comes to like the food side of it, it's really kind of like in a nutshell, like that clean eating perspective, like no bad ingredients, nothing that you can't read on the label. The now the big thing trend out there is like no seed oils is like a really big part of like both wellness and diet culture. When a lot of the evidence on seed oils is very strong on its impact for, you know, increased cardiovascular health, better cardiovascular outcomes. Wellness culture, again, is like very rooted in like non-traditional practices, a lot of like the alternative medicine space. So like, don't do this for your cold. Go to the health food store and get all these nasty tasting little tinctures. Actually, don't. I went to 7-Eleven. I just had a cold, if you can't tell. I'm a little congested. And I actually just like went to 7-Eleven and got like regular schmegular cold medicine from 7-Eleven. Like that's where I am. I went from like one extreme to like just being normal. Or like the other. 7-Eleven for my medication. What's up? You know, and that's really kind of what we're looking at in a nutshell. Now, it's not to say that everything that falls under wellness culture that I'm even going to mention today is like fake or not real or doesn't help. It's to the degree of which these promises are being made that like, this is it. This is the panacea of like wellness. This is the fountain of youth. And I see it like, it's not just in the food and supplement space too, guys. You're seeing it also in like the skincare and like the beauty world where like you're being marketed these products for like youthful skin by people who clearly have either had plastic surgery or a lot of Botox, which like I'm not here to knock down plastic surgery or Botox. I'm just saying that like we're selling products from people and influencers who have clearly had work done, and saying that this is the product that like is age defying, is helping with their longevity. That's like another, I'm going to write it down now, guys. We're doing another one on, the longevity movement. Okay. So now I want to move on to some, like, just a few examples of like wellness culture and really highlighting some of the bigger trends that we're seeing here now, and also kind of highlighting an old trend that is still here to this day and I'm trying to understand. Let's talk about the old trend first. So 2010s, right? Maybe it was like a little bit earlier. The trend of like the reset, the detox, the juice cleanses were like, when I was really swept up in diet culture, I never did a juice cleanse, but I couldn't not eat like that. Guys, I couldn't just drink juice. But the juice cleanses, the detoxes were really like coming to life then, and they're still around now. There's actually one. Now, Saqqara Life is like one of those things, and you came out with like the juice presses. There's now one called Chroma Wellness, and it is a very expensive 5-day reset. It is $450 for the deluxe. You can also make it vegan. And then you have the limited edition ultimate reset with all the bells and whistles.
what's included or what the claims are for this like 5-day reset is a detox or cleanse, unlike any detox or cleanse on the market. Each day consists of 9 nutrient-rich, deliciously satisfying meals and beverages. Bevies. No starvation here. I'm going to read you guys what it comes with. Or so they make sure to tell you, like, no diet culture here, just pure wellness culture, but also some diet culture. Of course, it's a thin woman. Our revolutionary program is customized to your taste and goals and works seamlessly with your lifestyle, working, traveling, training, or slowing down at home. With proven results in just 5 days, slim and de-bloat, better sleep, clear and calm mind, sustained weight loss. Okay, cool. More energy, improved digestion. So, like, I love the claims that come, like, I like how they, like, slim and de-bloat, better sleep, clear and calm mind, sustained weight loss. Have to put the weight loss in there. More energy, improved digestion. Now we're going to look at the guide. So this is, it's called Chroma Wellness. Ugh, I have to download the guide. Give me a moment. Okay, this download's taking too long to come into my inbox. Let me see. Oh, here it is. My guide is here, the 5-day reset. Download the guide. Learn more. Oh my gosh, there's so many things I have to click. I'm going to get so many emails from this company now. Okay, so they have a whole little thing. Now this box is like filled with all these sachets, right? Which I think are supposed to be like your meals or like your little detox drinks or whatever. But day one, awaken. Begin to awaken the healing transformation. Day two, detox. Day three, activate. You should start to feel the difference now and likely have a rhythm in the program. It's been 3 days. Day four, replenish. Your gut, brain, and adrenals and muscles are optimally absorbing the nutrients as you slim. Okay, that's nonsense. You're starved yourself. So now your muscles and your body is just soaking in any little nutrient that you give it. Day five, reset. As you complete your 5-day reset, you should notice some changes in how you look and feel. You are dehydrated. Yeah, these are like little sachets that you mix with like water or something. They have like a little testimonial from Debbie H., a producer. I've never felt better. I lost 6 pounds and lost all cravings for sugar, Pop-Tarts, and processed crap. I'm only craving clean food. Okay. I was able to exercise, attend meetings, undistracted, and even teach my Barry's Bootcamp classes with my usual energy and enthusiasm. Thank you, Joey Gonzalez, the CEO of Barry's Bootcamp. So this thing was like 36 pages long, and there's actually no food at all. You have these like sachets. So I guess you like mix with water or like, I don't know, they gave you a list of food to buy. It doesn't really give you, oh gosh, the doctor on it is Gwyneth Paltrow's. Okay, here it is. Breakfast. Nourish yourself with our satisfying super porridge. Add berries as desired. This is all in the morning. Hydrate. Drink our cranberry hydration elixir. Boost. Replenish with one of our delicious plant-based smoothies. Menu rotates daily by blending a sachet contest with your favorite non-dairy milk. If desired, you can add frozen berries or spinach. If you're starving and feel like you're about to pass out, add frozen berries and or spinach. Guys, I so love being sassy on this. Afternoon, lunch, heal your gut with one of our nutrient-dense bone or veggie broths. You get veggie broth for lunch. And then you get to alkalize with the Super Greens Elixir. You get a snack. Oh my gosh, wait, guys, the snack is 1 to 2 tablespoons of OMG cookie butter. It's cookie butter. It's speculoose that you can get from Trader Joe's. It's cookie butter. We dare you not to finish a full jar in one day. You probably will want to because you're going to be starving. Evening. Customize your evening bone broth with veggies and or protein as needed. I don't know if you guys remember that Gwyneth Paltrow clip from that podcast I can't think of the name of. Okay, it was like the Skinny Confidential or something along those lines. I don't know. One of those people. Dare Media. This is very reminiscent of Gwyneth Paltrow's day. if you remember that, just like have a bone broth and an IV. We're going to talk about IVs in a minute. We're lungs. Very reminiscent of that. After dinner supplement. You take supplements after dinner. Magnesium, so you can poop, right, in the morning to support your digestive system because you're not eating enough to poop. So it's just going to, like, push anything, any remnant of food left in your GI tract out. Fasting. Sip on our perfect fast ginger turmeric tea to curb your urge to for a late night snack. That was so depressing for me to read. Drink some turmeric tea to curb your urge for a late night snack. Superfood creamer. Limited edition reset only. Add a little boost and creaminess to your latte or smoothie. A little creamer. Anyway, guys, they said no starvation here yet. Literally probably ate that and it's only 10 a.m. It's like a bunch of liquids. It's a bunch of broths. It's a bunch of hot water with powders in them. That's what this is. Hot water with powder. But this is so typical wellness culture. It costs $525 for a bunch of sachets. You do get like a little mixer. You do get like all these little, oh my God, they look like little tea bags. It's so sad. Oh, they do have an extra kick in the $525 kick. But you get like one of those little like mixers, like the little that you do and you make like drinks. $525 for that. That is a ripoff. You can literally go to the grocery store and get some Knorr's packets and make yourself some broth, or go get like a container of bone broth, Franz bone broth. Go get some kettle fire bone broth and drink that at home for 5 days. But it's really like the thing about these programs and these detoxes and these resets is like, it's the allure of like, I did a Kroma wellness reset. It's like a K, Kroma, K-R-O-M-A. Go look it up. It's actually beautiful. I mean, it's pretty, but like $525, it's really a status thing. It's not even like whatever. But like the detox, the metabolism boost, the resets, they have not gone away. I've had clients ask me, should I do a reset? I'm like, stop, please, no. Still 2012. Anyway, when will it end? It's such a money suck. It's such a money suck. Save it. Even if you have $525 sitting around, go buy a pair of shoes. Go buy a pair of shoes. Go buy 17 pairs of shoes for a family in need. Like, that's what we can do with $525. Like, nice sneakers for a family in need. Let's do that. Next. I'm done. This is such an offshoot of the Almond Mom episode. It's like, this is also very Almond Mom-ish. The next thing is the adaptogens. Now, I'm going to say this, which there is great evidence for some of these adaptogens out there. It's nootropics, adaptogens that have like hit the market. There's some great research. I am not an expert on this, but I do know that a lot of this is just kind of like hocus pocus. Ones that could potentially help, and it's not that like I say these and you guys run to the store and start taking them. Ashwagandha, rhodiola. These have been shown to be helpful with some specific conditions. Like, I've utilized ashwagandha with several of my clients, particularly when it comes to sleep. So there is science, and I'm not going into the science behind it in this episode. But what I want to talk about is like the overselling of a lot of these like adrenal super tonic supplements and things out there that are really pushed by wellness culture. A big thing recently has been like the mushrooms and like the mushroom coffees of the world and like the adaptogenic nature of like lion's mane and like reishi mushroom and how powerful they are. I spent a lot of time doing a lot of research on some of these mushrooms, right? So you have the like the reishi, the cordyceps, lion's mane, etc. A lot of these studies, first of all, come from animals, right? So they come from like lab studies on animals, which is like mice or, you know, lab rats that they do these studies on. Some of these studies are only done on specific populations, such as like cancer patients or looking at cancer cells. So they isolate cancer cells and do studies on that. Another thing when it comes to these mushrooms is like the micro dosing of mushrooms.
like lion's mane and like lower levels of anxiety and depression. And it could very well be beneficial to people, but the evidence, again, is not really there and it's not very strong. My big thing is if people want to go and do this and take this and run with it, that's fine. It's probably not going to cause like too much harm, though I can't say it's not going to cause any harm. I'd have to dig a little bit deeper into the research, but as I recall, there's not too many like contraindications in terms of taking some of these things. For some of these mushrooms, like there may be an interaction when it comes to certain medications. And like these are things that like these influencers and people are not talking about because they probably don't know that, or they don't understand that there could be interactions. Like that's the difference between like a healthcare professional and an influencer. It's like healthcare professional is going to do their due diligence and make sure that they understand that. But when it comes to these mushrooms, like a lot of them are making claims for like anti-cancer effects. Again, a lot of these things are looking at like in vitro, looking at like the actual cells versus like in vivo, which is in the human. So they like isolate the cells and then look at, you know, how these mushrooms can impact the cell or whatever, but in a petri dish, not in a human. Another thing is like anti-diabetic effects or antioxidant effects. Like, sure, they might have an antioxidant like capability and action. That might be true. It's just like, you know, GI effects or, you know, cardiovascular effects. It's just that the extent to which the claims are being made and the evidence that we have, they don't match up when it comes to this, guys. And I'm going to say that for like pretty much like 90% of the things that I say on this podcast. It's not to say don't do it, don't try it, but just like good old fashioned foundational nutrition can help with a lot of these things in means of like anti-diabetic and cardiovascular disease and stuff like that. The next thing I want to talk about is the morning routine trend and like the lifestyle stuff. So what I mean by that is like you might see on TikTok a lot of these like very thin men and women on Instagram or TikTok. A lot of these like biohackery people talk about like this. No, it's great to have a morning routine. I would love a morning routine, but like a simple one. Like you wake up, maybe like do a little stretching, get some sunlight, like don't pick up your phone right away, Gabby. Like a simple morning routine. These like 3-hour morning routines of like people waking up early, doing like a red light therapy, breathing through one nostril, breathing through the other nostril, doing like a cold plunge, doing then like a hot there. It's like who's got that time? They clearly don't have children, I'll tell you that much. But these like morning trends, it's like this is such a like a holier than thou kind of like experience thing that you see. And it causes, I would say, for some people, some like mental harm, being like, okay, this is what I have to do to be healthy. Sure. Is it not great if you're waking up and you're feeling like super fatigued and foggy every single morning and like really difficult to get out of bed? Like, no, there might be some looking at your lifestyle behaviors before bed in the morning and see what, you know, what changes you can make. Do you need a 3-hour morning routine that involves multiple steps and different devices and like different breathing methods to like regulate every single hormone in the body? No. Now, one thing I do like about that is like, you know, getting some sunlight in the morning to regulate like your cortisol response. Love that. Like I also would love to like do a little bit of like reading and meditation in the morning. That's excellent, right? Waiting 30 minutes to 60 minutes to like drink your coffee. Great for cortisol regulation. Do you need to be like doing a cold plunge with your face in a bowl of water every single morning? No, but like, could it be helpful once in a while? Sure. Don't feel the pressure to have to like adopt to all of these practices that may or may not be really helpful. Another practice out there are the IV drips, right? The vitamin and mineral IVs, which are like all the rage right now. They're like so popular. Now, there is a time and place for an IV nutrition drip, right? I have had some of my clients go and get one in certain
clinically kind of necessary, or, you know, positions where they could benefit from it. I've recommended it to athletes, people who are very, very, very hard trainers, right? I want people to understand that for like the high level elite athletes, this is not going to the gym 2 to 5 times a week for 1 hour. This is not that population. I'm talking about high level population of like training 2 to 5 hours. Some people doing 6 hours a day of training. Like the human body in like regular foundation nutrition is not going to be sufficient for this population. We are not built to push our body to that level without some sort of intervention happening, right? From the physical therapy side of it, from the athletic training side of it, from the nutrition side of it. So for this population, since they have such high levels of what we would call like inflammation, an IV vitamin therapy could be really helpful for them. You know, not every single day, but once a week, once a month for this kind of a population. Another time I've recommended it is to some of my pregnant clients who were having really hard time eating, lots of vomiting, lots of fluid loss, to get some like, you know, quick rehydration and some nutrition in quick. That's been a trend now, even within like the general population, a non-clinical application of this. Would I say it's necessarily harmful? It could be, right? Getting in too much of a nutrient that you don't necessarily need. But in general, what I say is generally safe. Yes. Is it necessary? No. Is it very expensive? Yes. Can you take care of your health perfectly and not ever get an IV drip of vitamins? Absolutely, you can. There are certain applications of it. There are, again, certain, this is why I said in the beginning, this is not everything I'm going to say is going to be wrong or unnecessary, but you have to think about when you're consuming this kind of content and this kind of information, is it applicable to me? And the thing is, they're going to make it seem like it's applicable to you, but like, does the science say it's applicable to me? And then you go to your trusted sources for that. And sometimes your trusted sources are being paid. But as a healthcare professional with a license, I mean, for me, some people don't take it this way. I can't be putting my name on things and risking my, you know, code of ethics. First of all, I operate under a code of ethics that I take very seriously and cannot just blindly, you know, just put my name on this company's IV drip for, you know, Sue and Joe because they just want to spend on it. Again, like I said, it's also expensive. It's also like some of these IVs are 200, you know, upwards of 500. There's, you know, something called NAD, which can be helpful, in certain situations. That's like a $500 IV drip. So it is very expensive as well. Now, the last one I'm going to talk about on this podcast is something called colostrum. Now, colostrum has become very popular. And when you start seeing more content about something, guys, just know that there is more advertising dollars going into that product. I've said it before on this podcast and I'll say it again. The more advertisements, the more attention, the more marketing money is being put into this product. Just know how that's how it works. That means that they got a grant. They got some investment money and this is what they're spending it on. Which is fine. Like a company can do that and they see a good ROI on it and that's fine. But the colostrum trend has kind of gone to like the next level. There's a certain brand out there you may be seeing a lot of right now. It's called Arma, A-R-M-A. That's a brand I will say out loud, I guess. I guess I'm just going to name drop brands now. And it's an okay product, right? Like it's a good product. There is some clinical application to it. But a lot of the clinical application, first of all, we're looking at pediatric nutrition. We're looking at neonatal nutrition. We're looking at babies. And we're looking at certain GI conditions. There is some research that's kind of looking at some adults, some older adults, some athletes, a lot of stuff looking at gastrointestinal issues and permeability. So I have recommended bovine colostrum to some of my clients with specific gut issues to help with repair of the gut cell wall. It also does, bovine colostrum can, you know, contribute to a lot of immune factors, you know, being introduced into the body, which can be helpful. Again, our evidence on this is very young. It's not very strong. But my problem with a lot of the advertisements, especially coming from this one company, is a lot of their advertisements are talking a lot about like skin. And I'm going to come back to like the beauty, you know, the beauty industry side of wellness culture, and how the advertisements are really just trying to market it as like kind of like a beauty product. I mean, it does have a lot of clinical application. Again, like I said, I have recommended it before, but a lot of these benefits are kind of being drawn a little bit out of proportion. It can have a great immune effect. It can really help with gut health. It can really help improve a lot of different factors. There is some evidence, emerging that in the athletic and, you know, sports population, that bovine colostrum can be beneficial. And I think we should really kind of like maybe do a little bit of a deep dive on this, because it can be beneficial and it can be helpful. And I don't want to sound like so negative about colostrum. It's just these claims being made by these big companies that are kind of selling people a very expensive product that might not have the outcomes or even the research to really back that up. So let's do a little bit of a deep dive into that one other day. My next episode will not be on that, I promise you. And my next couple episodes will not be on that, I promise you. But it will be coming. But the next thing I want to start talking about, and the final thing, is really kind of talking about the fad diets and connecting wellness culture to orthorexia. So we see that there is this, you know, massive, very like hyper fixation on health and every single way possible that we can amplify our health and minimize our risk to adverse health outcomes. And listen, I am all about that too. But for some of these recommendations, it's not that deep. Like, some of these recommendations are going deeper and a little crazier than we need to. But when we look at a lot of these fad diets that are kind of born out of like this wellness focus on health, we look at things that like, let's start with paleo. Paleo was one of like the first like super health focus slash definitely rooted in weight loss. All of these eventually are, and more than most part, are sold as weight loss, but like kind of like frame it as like a health aspect. Like, other ones are straight up out there, like Jenny Craig, like is straight up like, I'm just here to not make you fat anymore. But paleo was like one of those ones that like came out and was just like, this is for your health and inflammation. Don't eat any legumes or carbs, but you can have these carbs, but you can't have those carbs. And it's, paleo still very confuses me very much. Like, I know there's no dairy. I know it's like avoiding legumes. I don't know if you can have quinoa. I don't think you can have quinoa. You might be able to have quinoa on paleo. It's really like what the Paleolithic people can have. I think you can have a potato because they might have been able to have potatoes. You can definitely have fruit and berries. Nuts, probably. Let's talk about the next one too. The other one that like kind of came out that was like all about your health was Whole30, right? Whole30 is like paleo on crack. Like, you can't have a lot of things. Like, there's a lot of things you can't have. I don't even really even know off the top of my head, like all the things you can't have on a Whole30 diet. Like, there's rules. There's rules, and then there's exceptions to the rule, the program rules. It's like an elimination. You avoid for 30 days. No added sugar, real or artificial. No alcohol in any form. No grains. No legumes. No dairy. No carrageenan or sulfates. Okay. These are like emulsifiers and things that like help things stay on the shelf that don't really have any kind of harm. Carrageenan is like one of those things that like I definitely was trying to avoid back in the day. And nowadays I'm like, give me all the carrageenan. Give me all the algae, right? Because that's all it is. No recreating baked goods, treats, or junk foods with approved ingredients. Oh my gosh. You can't even try to make a fake. Your cravings and habits won't change if you keep eating these foods, even if they're made with Whole30. That's like insane. Guys, that's like insane. You can't even make a healthy brownie on this. You can't even make a whole 30 cookie. This is savage. Y'all, I just learned that right now live on air. No stepping on the scale or taking measurements. Okay. Your reset is about so much more than just weight loss, and focusing on body compositions means you'll miss out on the most dramatic and lifelong benefits. Oh gosh, this is so wellness culture. It's not about weight, but it is about weight. Don't step on the scale. It's a life-changing experience. This is gross. These are exception foods. Ghee or clarified butter, fruit juice, certain legumes, green beans, and most peas are allowed. Vinegar and botanical extracts. Most vinegar, even though it has alcohol. This is insane. And then you reintroduce everything. This is insane. This is crazy. Why I bring this up? Why am I talking about this? So when we look at a lot of these like fad diets, super restrictive diets, right? They very much mimic a lot of the characteristics and a lot, especially within wellness culture, right? These are like these health only focused diets, which are totally diet culture too, guys. Like they have this like fixation on if you follow this plan of like pureness and like no sugar. My favorite is like the sugar detoxes also fall underneath this. Like don't eat sugar. You'll never crave a Pop-Tart again. BS. Give it 2 weeks. You're going to want a Pop-Tart again, girl. Give it a month. You're going to want that Pop-Tart again at some point. You're going to smell a Pop-Tart from 3 miles away and want to eat that Pop-Tart, okay? This is so chroma wellness too. The problem is that so many of these behaviors, mindsets are really glorified eating disorder behaviors and things that we see very common is specifically within restrictive eating disorders, right? You have anorexia and then orthorexia, which I'm going to start talking about now. So orthorexia has been like defined as, and I quote, a pathological fixation on eating only certain foods that are considered to be healthy and pure. Among the beliefs commonly held by people with this eating pattern are the perceived danger of foods with artificial substances and food prepared with the use of herbicides or pesticides, as well as avoidance of certain food groups such as carbohydrates and fats. Shall we go back to the Whole 30 list again, my friends? My friends? There's also like this quote on this website I remember reading once that was like really unhealthy. Let me see if I can find it. I gotta find it. It's basically like shaming people into this diet. The woman of this has like really big hair. Like it's really big hair. 30 days of self-care, 30 days of new healthy habits, 30 days of community. The Whole 30 has the power to change your life and you are worth it. The Whole 30 has the power to give you unhealthy relationships with food. You are worth it. Okay. I kid, but like I also don't. It's really like sad. Like we have glorified eating disorders. Let's talk a little bit more about orthorexia and defining some of these symptoms, signs and symptoms associated with it. So when we look at orthorexia, right, looking at now orthorexia is not formally recognized in the DSM, which is a diagnostic statistical manual, right, which is used by the mental health professionals to diagnose mental illnesses, right? So it's not in the book, though. Excuse me. We would like it to be there because it definitely does cause harm, malnutrition, mental and psychological as well as physiological distress in affected individuals. So looking at the warning signs and symptoms of orthorexia, this is coming from the National Eating Disorders Academy Association, NEDA. Compulsive checking of ingredients, lists, and nutrition labels. Like I've had some people come to me and be like, I spent a really long time in the supermarket like reading the labels and like making sure the food is clean and pure. And so when I get that kind of behavior from people, I start to like tread a little bit. I don't like be like, you have orthorexia. Like I tread a little bit. An increased concern about the health of ingredients, cutting out of increasing number of food groups such as sugar, carbs, dairy, meat, animal products. Whole 30. An inability to eat anything but from a narrow group of foods that are deemed healthy or pure, unusual interest in the health of what others are eating. I've seen that before. This is like, that's such an almond mom thing.
Spending hours per day thinking about what food might be served at upcoming events, showing high levels of distress when safe or healthy foods aren't available, obsessive following of healthy lifestyle blogs on Twitter and Instagram, body image concerns may or may not be present. So it may not be a weight loss thing, though many times I do find that it is a weight loss thing, but those concerns may or may not be present. So this is that like unhealthy obsession with healthy eating. And there are some grave consequences to it. Like I mentioned, like cutting out such amount of food groups can lead to a lot of malnutrition. In addition to that, we also see like loss of relationships, impaired social life. Like if your friends are going to like a hibachi restaurant and they're using seed oil, like you're probably not going to go to the hibachi restaurant, or you're going to be that person that orders like a steamed vegetable.
Now, when we look at some of the like associated risk factors of people with orthorexia, we see tendencies of like perfectionism, appearance orientation, or like very appearance oriented, a preoccupation with weight, being overweight, a preoccupation with avoiding being overweight, self-classified weight, and a fear, fearful and dismissive attachment styles. The other things that we also see predictors for orthorexia include, again, that overweight, preoccupation, appearance oriented, and a history of an eating disorder. When we look at eating disorders in general, anorexia, so the thing about orthorexia is that we don't see a ton of research in this, but in terms of anorexia, which we kind of put in the same boat as orthorexia, they're not the same characteristics, they're not the same diagnoses, but they both are restrictive eating disorders. We see very similar risk factors to include like food preferences, and differences in taste perception, food pickiness, right? Being overweight or being obese, feeding practices, parental feeding practices, and a history of parental eating disorders as well. When I'm kind of like, when I've gotten clients that I've kind of like suspected a little bit of like orthorexic tendencies, there's a couple of things that I do look at in terms of like their dietary practices, that would be, you know, especially like in terms of like dietary restrictions, I look for like, are they trying to avoid sugar at all costs? And do they understand that? Like, are they saying like, oh, I avoid sugar. And then I look at like their food recalls and their food preferences and they actually are avoiding sugar. Same thing of like gluten. Are they like going gluten-free with no clinical reason otherwise, like it's healthier, or like for inflammation, and there's no clinical reason to, there's no autoimmune, there's no celiac, there's no gut issues going on. That's something I'm looking at. Same thing with dairy-free. And like, is there a fear behind consuming certain kinds of foods? Like, is there an absolute no list, and what does that absolute no list look like? While research on this specific eating disorder is really kind of like a little bit, not, I wouldn't say it's in its infancy, we do have some research on it. We do have some screening tools available that are kind of like going through some validation, some that have been validated in terms of like diagnosing and screening for orthorexia. But in terms of like treatment, there is like a little bit of a better outlook on it, since a lot of these individuals are coming to us who are concerned with health and wellness. So it is sometimes a little bit easier to treat. Regardless of that, there are, you know, consequences and some like physiological consequences of this that we could see. And those are things like, you know, significant weight loss. I mentioned malnourishment. In terms of like the weight loss and malnourishment, we can see some medical complications similar to what we see in anorexia that can include osteopenia, which is the weakening of the bones. Osteoporosis is
like the kind of like the full blown progression of the disease, but we have osteopenia, anemia as well, hyponatremia, which could be low levels of sodium in the blood. And that's really important. You need a significant amount and a certain amount of sodium in the blood because it is one of our major electrolytes. We have bradycardia, which is a slow heart rate. And we also can see some lung conditions as well. While many people out there that may, you know, have pages and presence may not really fully understand or can even like start to conceptualize the idea that some of these things that they are pushing can be very harmful to a significant portion of the population, whether it's harmful in a sense that we're misleading people from taking treatments or getting the help that they need because this quote unquote pill, supplement, cleanse, detox is going to cure you of X, Y, and Z. That's one way it's causing harm. In terms of like diet culture and eating disorders, obviously on another end of the spectrum, and it's not every single individual that comes in touch with like wellness and diet culture does develop one, but we do know that the biggest risk factor for developing one of the bigger risk factors is going on a diet or engaging in some sort of diet behavior is a risk factor for developing a eating disorder. And so while people may not really fully understand the depth and harm that their little page may cause, it does. And it does to a lot of people. And I'm going to continue to advocate for that since this is my bread and butter and this is what I do for a living. And I can directly see the harm and the impact both on like the disordered level and then on the opposite level of like someone not getting the correct treatment. Because I mean, like I've had people with gut issues, major gut issues, like come to me and I'd be like, girl, we got to go get you tested for A, B, C, D, E, F, G, W, X, Y, and Z, because you're taking all these supplements because you followed the wellness influencer of the month, who's like, I'm going to cure your gut and hormones because everything's related and that's why your hair's falling out. I mean, it could be. But like, we got to go get like proper diagnoses first and understand that. So I've really helped people kind of pull away from that on that end of the spectrum. And then on the other end of the spectrum as well in the disordered eating. So it's not like everyone who touches wellness culture develops an eating disorder. No. And wellness culture can cause harm outside of an eating disorder. If you made it to the hour mark of this podcast, I thank you so much. And I thank you for being a part of my passion project because this podcast is such a huge part of my passion, my knowledge, my skills, and just like what I love to do. I do have the gift of gab. I do love talking a lot. And I really appreciate your time and listening to me and my subjects. And, you know, a lot of this is what you guys also ask for. If you or anyone you know is struggling with your relationship with food, your relationship with body image, please do not be afraid to reach out to me. You can DM me at Gabby M. Barreto on Instagram. You can also email me at nutritionbygabby@gmail.com. Whether I will be able to help you or your loved one, or I can also help point you in the right direction to getting the help that you need. On my next episode, guys, I am going to be talking about high protein diets. This is a topic that a lot of people, even in person, came up to me and be like, I'm so excited for you to talk about high protein diets because it's all I hear about. And so I'm going to really outline in my next episode, what is a high protein diet? How are we defining that? What are the protein recommendations? Where did they come from? How much should you be eating? What are some of the dangers of a high protein diet? What are some of the benefits of a high protein diet? And is a high protein diet right for you? So that'll be on my next episode. As always, guys, thank you so much for joining me on this podcast. I will see you guys next time.